Hey everyone, it's time for another 10K Saturday, and Allison sits down with Kevin Spencer. He's a musician, a singer, and more than that, he was on Allison's Rent tour way, way back ago. Because, you know, she had a life before she met me. Whatever. Anyway, Kevin's got a concert tonight, so right after you listen to this interview, make sure you go online, look up concert tickets to Electric Avenue tonight for MTV's 35th anniversary party. What? 35th anniversary party? Ugh. Someone tell Downtown Julie Brown.
And now, it's 10K Saturday with Allison and Lulu.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another 10K Saturday. It's our weekly bonus episode where we do interviews and bonus features. And today I am so excited because I have a longtime friend and coworker on stage. Kevin Spencer is with me via Zoom. Say hi, Kevin.
Hey, everybody.
So we were already chatting like a good 5 to 10 minutes. And then I was like, wait, we have to stop. We have to start recording all of this because we were just catching up. So Kevin and I met a long time ago, like 20 years ago, when we were doing the first non-EC national tour of Rent.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Kevin played Roger, and I was actually brought out a couple months into the tour as a replacement, and we were just kind of reliving that moment. And I was 19
crazy
years old.
Crazy. Yeah, you were just a baby, but at the same time, you fit in because you just already had this other experience, and just you weren't a child to deal with. It was just like, you're a professional. Yeah. You're just young.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was my first gig, because I had just finished AMDA and had started auditioning, and randomly Telsey called me in, and I was one of three people replacement for Julie Riper. And it was crazy. I remember, I still vividly remember the first time I saw you on stage, because
you had to watch
the
show
that night in Nashville and watched it. Yeah, I had to watch the show. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I remember everyone always referred to you as the Canadian rock star.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? I was like, I'm not just the Canadian, but like the only non-American, right? So it's like, there was a certain amount of razzing and fun that was had with my nationality, no doubt, until the cast went and did a show and actually had some downtime in Canada. And everybody, one by one, all came to me and were like, oh my God, your country's incredible. And I was like, I told you.
I remember that. I remember, is it just like the subway system or something?
Well, Toronto is just like New York. It's just cleaner. That's about it.
We were just talking about this before we pressed record, is that I know your wife. You met your wife on tour. And it's crazy to me.
Yeah, well, because especially like with any production, you become family. But when you're in a traveling, touring production, specifically Rent is different. I think anybody that's been involved in Rent can say this pretty clearly, that Rent is not like any other musical out there, not just from its context, not just from the material that Jonathan wrote for us, but large in part to do with the subject matter and the way that we have to fall in love and fall out of love and then find love again as a cast, as a team. There are no leads. Yeah. There are no hierarchy and things like that. I was on the poster, but it didn't, pardon my language, it didn't mean shit to me. It was just a matter of, we've got a job to do, and there's about 25 of us out here on the road together, and we're trying to, hey, that's my alarm telling me that I'm supposed to be on a podcast. But
nailed it.
It nailed it. You know, the truth is that family is such a big part of Rent, and it's part of that vibe. And so to have my family expand while I'm in the middle of Rent, my parents and everybody else, they always tell you, oh, don't worry, you know, you're going to find your love when you're not looking for it. And I'd just gone through a tough breakup, and I was dealing with that while I was out on tour with my new Rent family, trying to figure out what it's like to be doing this as my first theater production ever. It ended up that meeting in a restaurant on my night off, just happened to look over, and this girl's looking at me and I'm looking at her, and we're in Athens, Georgia. And I'm disappointed because REM's from this town and I wanted to perform there, but I was on vocal rest. It was my first time having vocal rest. So literally for October, November, December, and January, I didn't take a show off. So we're now 4 months and 2 weeks into the tour, and both of my understudies are looking at me going, dude, 8 shows a week. And even the music director's like, nobody does more than 25 shows in a row, and you're at 90. what are you doing? You never know what people are saying behind your back, right? But like, I took that night off, and it was difficult for me to do so from the standpoint of just coming from rock and roll and stuff. You just take the bucket with you when you have the flu.
We used to say you add cords of steel.
Because if you take the night off, you are now taking all of your bandmates and all of your crew out of employment for the day. So it was ingrained in me from 10 years of touring and rock and roll before I did Rent that you just don't do that. You don't take a day off. Yeah, I'm in a restaurant and I look over and then she's looking at me. I'm looking at her. I'm like, God, she thinks I'm cute. She's totally looking at me. Is this happening? And then I start straightening up my bill and I'm in a bad mood because they just injected me with steroids for the first time in my life. And I'm like trying to get my voice back. And she comes over and she says, hi. And I look up and the crazy thing is that I'm locked into her eyes and I said, hi. And she says, are you Kevin Spencer from Rent? And my heart sank, Allison. I was broken because it became work. And I never, ever was that person that crossed work and pleasure. So I was like, oh, work mode. Yes, absolutely. Hey, so nice to see you. So nice to meet you. You're going to enjoy the show. I'm not in it tonight. You're going to see an understudy, but great to have met you. And I shut her down. And she was like, oh. And she walked away and she turned around. And she said, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I said, sure. She says, are you gay? And I looked at her and I said, who says that?
Yeah.
And she said, well, you know, the whole theater thing. And, you know, and I was like, I'm not. And she goes, okay, well, that's fantastic. Good for me, bad for them. See those two gay men sitting over there? It's my best friends. They recognize you because they've had a poster of you on their fridge for a while. But I thought you were cute and I wanted to come over and talk to you. So that was my excuse. But you're being a bit of a jerk. And I said, I don't mean to be. And she goes, no, I get it. Your voice is tired. You're in vocal rest. I can only imagine your voice is your best friend. So it's got to be difficult for you. But here's my number. If you want to get together for coffee while you're in town, I'll do all the talking so you can remain quiet.
Christy, she like just took over.
Yeah. Owned it. She owned it. And I was just like, hey, really nice to have met you. And she said, can we take a picture? And I said, sure. I left the restaurant at the Palmas that night and I went back to my hotel room on house arrest while the show was going on. And I just sat there and stared at her phone number and I texted her while she was in the show. And then we had dinner the next day quietly. I didn't talk much. And here we are. We're married and in love. It's great.
How long have you been married?
We've been married for 10, almost 11 years now. It'll be 11 years. And
that's so amazing.
Next month on the 15th.
Yeah, I remember meeting her and it's just crazy. It's so cool. I had never heard that story though. I didn't know how ballsy she was.
Yeah, and that was a big part for me, Allison. Yeah, to know that you're going to be able to be with someone that's not going to be rattled by what the world that we live in. Because especially for me, like, you know, even when I would take her back home and stuff, or we would go and have a night off from Rent or my 2 weeks off or whatever, I want to go touch base with some of my friends in the rock and roll touring world. So like, having her backstage at like a Nickelback concert or a Michael Bublé concert or whatever, and just seeing and hanging out with all these other people, that it's normal for me, but she's unfazed. And she's just, yep. Hey, how's it going? Cool. Just another human being. And I don't care that you're famous. And that means a lot because then you don't have to feel like you're chasing or babysitting anything, but she's more rock solid than I am. I'll tell you that.
So let's back up a little bit. Tell our listeners, because I know a lot of them are going to go, oh, I've heard of that band. I've heard of that band. I've heard of that band. So a little bit of your journey, how you started and then how all of a sudden that turned into doing theater.
You know, again, some of the bands that I played with in Canada didn't really have too much penetration in the States in the sense of massive record sales, but they certainly did well back home. I just started out really young and I told my parents by the time I was 16, I said, Mom, I'm going to put songs on the radio. And she would like, you know, pat my head as I'd walk by. Oh, that's nice, son. Good luck. And it never really fazed them. But by the time I was 18, my bandmates and I were writing songs and producing them ourselves and had a top 10 in the country without a record label, without anything, and just on college radio. And then started to go up from there. And then we started getting national real radio play by the time I was 19. And so I got really lucky and I was asked to join a band called Rhymes of the Orange, which was the biggest independent band in the country at the time. And it literally was just, it kind of kickstarted my career. It happened the same day that my band broke up. It was so serendipitous. So I moved from Ontario, Hamilton, right outside Toronto, all the way to Vancouver when I was 20 years old on about maybe 3 hours notice. I just packed up everything I had and moved. I just freshly got out of the Army and threw everything I had in a duffel bag, and my Army duffel bag, actually, with one guitar.
I didn't know you were in the Army.
Yeah, I did 3.5 years as a part-time soldier, and just I was a drummer. My brother was a piper.
Okay.
And so my summer job back then was going with the pipe band, and we'd go to my first posting was Berlin, 1991, 2 years after the wall came down. We went over to end peacekeeping, the 2 year peacekeeping mission.
Wow.
We were there with the royal family, and we marched through the Brandenburg Gate where they kicked the wall through in Berlin, 2 years after they did it to end peacekeeping. So whatever, I was 17, I guess, something like that. And maybe 18, and you have your picture in history books. It kind of all downhill from there, really, to, you know, to be part of that back in 91. And then, but I was a musician, I was a drummer and in the Army. So it, for me, it was still touring as a musician. But anyway, I landed this job with this band in like 96 with Rhymes of the Orange, moved to Vancouver, and I started playing stadiums with them. It was my first chance of going, whoa, this is insane. We're walking on stage and there's 25,000 people here, or there's 15,000 people here. It was insane. I never experienced that before. And then I started writing songs for them, and I wrote the single for the next record. And then another band took off out of nowhere that I got involved with called Mud Girl. And we were under Sarah McLachlan's management. And from, you know, rags to riches type of a thing, although the riches really wasn't there, meaning from the first time that we did our first rehearsal, and it was only 6 months before we were the center gatefold in Rolling Stone, right? Like unbelievable. From your first rehearsal and first gigs to you're on Lilith Fair and in the United States, and you're in Rolling Stone, you're in Spin, you're in the gatefold, all these things are happening. And then the videos are being played on MTV and Much Music, and everything's going up.
It's like what movies are made of.
I met some people backstage. I don't remember meeting them specifically at Lilith Fair, just a couple of nice girls. And then they started talking to me and asked me if I would do some singing with them when I got back to Vancouver. And I said, sure. So I went in and I did some singing for them in Vancouver, and this was like right at the start of 96, I guess, end of 96 rather. And they were putting together something, some theatrical thing. I wasn't sure what it was. I don't know much about it. And then all of a sudden it was like, I did some singing with them, and they took me to the radio station with them to do some press. And they were like, we want to see how you handle press. And I was like, what's this about? And they said, we just want you to talk about your auditions and what it's like to be a musician and stuff. And I didn't realize the whole thing was an audition. No idea. And it was the people from Telsey. And they took me to a radio station, and I did an interview about being a musician and a working person in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And they said, thank you so much. Can you read this script? And can you sing this song? And they had me sing Halloween. They wanted me to be Mark for what became...
Oh, interesting.
I guess that would have been the Benny tour.
Okay.
And they ended up going with Neil Patrick Harris. And... which is 100% understandable. And I had no idea what it was, nor that I was auditioning. I had no idea. I didn't know this till years later.
That's so crazy. Yeah.
I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what Rent was. I'd seen posters, but I didn't really care. And then long story short, they called me back in 2001 out of nowhere. And this is the strangest story. And I rarely tell this, but I'll just give you the cliff notes if I can. I had literally just gone through a bad breakup. I was with my band, and I said, guys, I'm just kind of down. And they said, no, we understand. But we got a tour happening. It's only going to be a 2-day run, and we're going to Toronto to do some big publicity gigs. So we leave in like 36 hours or something. I said, okay. So that night, I was walking down the street in Vancouver to go meet my guitar player, Craig, for a drink. And all of a sudden, this girl comes running up, and she grabs my sleeve, and she turns around, and she says, hey, who are you? I look at her, and I was like, my name's Kevin. And I kept walking, and she goes, no, wait. She pulls me back, and she goes, who are you? And I said, my name's Kevin. She goes, what's your last name? I said, Spencer. She goes, why do I want to talk to you? I don't. And I was like, I don't know, but I'm going this way. And I was in a bit of the He-Man Woman Haters Club at the time, you know, just I was walking the street, and this girl grabs my arm again. She turns me around, and her friend comes running up, and this really good looking black guy with a Rent jacket on. And he goes, hey, my name's Justin. And I was like, hey, Justin, nice to meet you. You're with Rent? And he goes, yeah. And then she says, oh, you know the show? I was like, no, I've seen posters around. Are you with the show too? She says, yeah, my name is Maggie Benjamin. I said, oh, hey, Maggie, nice to meet you. And he goes, my name's Justin. It's Justin Johnson. And he goes, I play, I'm an understudy for Angel in the show. I said, I don't know what that means. She says, well, I play Maureen. I said, I don't know what that means. And I was just kind of aloof about it. And I said, well, okay. And she goes, you're coming for a drink with us. I said, no, I'm not. I'm going to meet my guitar player, Craig. She grabs my arm. She spins me around again. And she says,
oh, wow.
You're coming for a drink with us. Like a Jedi mind trick. And I said, okay. And I text Craig, hey, man, I'm not going to make it. I'll talk to you later. So I went for a drink with them. They took me to this bar that I was doing acoustic shows at every 2 weeks. And they just wanted to go there. I was like, yeah, sure, we'll go there. And I walk in and they've got an acoustic stage set up and it's the entire Rent cast from the Benny tour. And I'm like meeting these people. Yeah. And I was like, hey guys, how's it going? Nice to see you. And then I was leaving and I was walking out the door. I was like, I got to go. I leave on tour in the morning for a couple of days. It's only a 2-day tour. She said, okay. And this is like Friday night or something. And she says, take my number. I was like, okay. I have no intention of using this number, Allison, because she's gorgeous and she's super nice, but I'm not interested in girls right now in the sense of trying to date, right? So I was like, okay, cool. Thank you so much for the number. She ended up giving me that number and kiss on the cheek and said, really nice to meet you. I went out and did those 2 dates. I get back and Monday morning, I get a phone call and I said, hello. And I said, hi, Kevin. I said, yeah. And they said, hi, it's Bernard Telsey Casting in New York City. We wanted to speak to you about the musical Rent.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you want to speak about Rent, is it? Yeah. Okay, cool. And I told my bandmates about meeting the cast from Rent and this girl. So I'm on my cell phone looking around, waiting for one of my bandmates to jump out of the bushes and go, ha ha, got you. And I thought it was a joke. And I was like, oh, okay, so what's your number? Must be a New York exchange. And they was like, yeah, 917. And they gave me the number and I wrote it down. I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, that's a New York number. Sure, I'll call you back, thinking it's a joke. I call back and they're like, casting hold, please. And then all of a sudden Victoria comes on the phone. She goes, Kevin, it's Victoria again. So I understand why you would doubt this, but it's real.
I thought it was a joke.
We've been following you since some of our people met you in 96 and we saw the Rolling Stone stuff. We saw the videos. We saw the stuff in Spin. Right now we're down to 24 mm-hmm. guys to play the character of Roger and you're the wild card. You're the only one that comes from rock and roll.
Yeah.
And that's always served us well. So we want to know if you'll fly to New York City in 2.5 days and sing for us. And I was like, holy shit. And they're like, yeah, you got to be here in 2.5 days. I was like, okay, fine. Send me the address. And so I got off the phone and I called back and I said, does this have anything to do with a girl name? And I had to unfold the paper. And I was like, Maggie Benjamin. She goes, you know, Maggie Benjamin. I was like, I just met her on Friday. That's so weird. And she was like, oh my God, yeah. That's right. They're in Vancouver. Oh, that's so strange. And it's like, okay, cool. Thanks. Nothing to do with anything. So I called Maggie. I know. I called Maggie. I said, hey, how's it going? We met. And she goes, Kevin. Yeah. How are you? And I said, good. I said, I just got the strangest call. And I told her about it. And she starts screaming. Oh my God, you're going to be the new Roger. That's why I saw you on the street that day. And you just lit up like a light bulb to me from a distance. I had to talk to you. For some reason, I've let 150 people on the street. You lit up. And I was like, that's so weird. So I went.
That's so crazy.
She said, you've never seen the show, have you? I said, I have no idea what Rent is about. She said, you have to see the show before you audition. So I got on a plane 3 hours later, flew to San Francisco, saw the Benny cast do the show, flew to New York the next morning, auditioned, and got the show.
It's so serendipitous.
Isn't that nuts?
I love that.
So serendipitous. Like, you can't plan that stuff. So sorry about that long story.
No, are you kidding? I can't believe I've never heard it. I guess we've never like actually sat down. Because, you know, once you're in something with someone, you don't actually do all the backstory stuff because we were living it together. So we were like just kind of in the moment going through life, which is crazy. And I was so young, I couldn't drink or gamble or anything.
Oh, that's so right. Oh, yeah.
I remember, I forget what city we were in, but I had a fake ID. Me and Justin both had fake IDs and they got taken.
Yeah, I think we were
we were trying to go to some drag show.
I was going
to
say, I think we were in like St. Paul or something like that. Good old Minnesota.
Crystal was trying to sneak me in.
But what, the Rent cast going to a drag show on a Sunday night? That's so
exactly.
Not like us.
Exactly. Okay, so let's flash forward now. I mean, it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about Electric Avenue? I mean, I of course follow you guys on Facebook, but first of all, you're like the best local band in Atlanta, right? Didn't you just win that?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, that was a nice award. Again, you know, that stuff, it's so, I don't know. I just don't wear accolades well in that situation. You know, when someone turns around and says you're the best band in Atlanta, what does that really mean? You know, there's so many great players. If you ask me who the best band is in Atlanta, it's probably someone you've never heard of. But I will say that I'm very lucky in the situation that my band, the guys that are in Electric Avenue, I am the least accomplished and I am the least solid musician in the entire band. The guys that are in our lineup are, it's insane. It's insane how good these guys are. And I've worked with a lot of musicians in my career over the last 28, 29 years. And these guys are just unbelievable what their skill sets are and what their resumes are and stuff. But yeah, it's crazy. Again, for the people that are listening, Electric Avenue is called the 80s MTV Experience. It's a tribute band. And I never got into this entertainment industry to be in a tribute band. That was not something that was really ever on my radar. In fact, it was the exact opposite of what I wanted on my radar when I was young. But it came at a function instead of fashion point, and meaning that after Rent, I'm Canadian. And so after Rent, I did as much touring as I possibly could with other people and picked up gigs here and there. And I even considered doing some more theater. I talked at length for quite some time with Brian May and Roger Taylor about We Will Rock You.
Oh, yeah.
They wanted me to play Galileo. So they had me out to Los Angeles, and I got to work with Brian May and Roger Taylor on all of the Queen songs for 2 weeks. Yeah. And then they were flying me back and forth between Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Vegas for meetings. And then they changed the script right in the middle of it all. And I was just not happy with it. I was like, this is not going to work. This is Britney Spears jokes. You've cheapened it. The play was amazing as it was. And I started to back out of it. And then Ben, the music director, said, he flew back to England, and he's like, if you don't hire this guy, Kevin, you guys are crazy. And that's when I was just like, I don't think I even want the gig, because I don't think it's going to do well. But here's a lesson learned in theater. Say yes to the gig, even when you think it's going to tank, because if it tanks, as it did, I would have had to do a month of rehearsals and 2 or 3 weeks worth of shows, and then they would have had to buy me out of a contract for another 49 weeks worth of pay. So that was my learning lesson. The show did fail.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyway, my point is that I did that, you know, I did a bunch of work with that. And then I got picked up with a producer friend of mine named Daniel Lamois, who is one of my idols. And I don't know how I came in his midst, but he offered me a job. And he was the producer behind all the U2, Peter Gabriel, Bob Dylan, Emmylou Harris. Rolling Stone called him the most important record producer of our generation. Yeah. And so he picked me up and said, you want a job? And I was like, are you kidding? And he was like, you're going to end up doing all the Lackey stuff, but you're going to learn from me. And so I worked on and off for him for 5 years. And I kept my head down. I didn't put anything on social media about it. I just flew around the world with him and all his famous friends, and learning, watching them record, watching him perform, watching him negotiate situations. It was craziest thing, you know, to be like, one day you're hanging out with Sting, the next day you're hanging out with Mr. 24 himself, you know, and just like all these crazy people that are in his world. And then I jumped out of that when I got married, and I lost my immigration ability to cross borders. And that's when it became a function thing of like, how am I going to pay my bills? Now I can't leave the States. I just got married. I need to stay in the States for at least a year. I need to work as a musician.
Yeah.
I can't take any of the gigs that I'm going to be offered because they all tour internationally. So how do you function? And I bit the bullet and started playing covers with friends around here. And a couple of the bands just really started to take off. And Electric Avenue was born out of one of them. It was supposed to be a little side project. We said, why don't we put together a set list of all the songs that we loved growing up, that most bands, if they do try to do these songs, they butcher them. And most bands aren't going to try these songs because they don't have the musical faculty, the harmony factory, and or the production facility to be able to put together all these sounds and make it sound like the records, because they're very heavy production records.
Yeah, 80s has a very distinct sound to it.
Yeah, if you use the wrong reverb, you're screwed. If you use the wrong delay, you're screwed, or the wrong keyboard or whatever. It just sounds cheesy at that point. So, you know, these are my nerd friends, where we were like nerding out on equipment all the time with each other. Like, oh my God, what revision of keyboard was that? Oh, they made a tweak in that keyboard in 1982, which made it sound like this. And all of my friends know these things. So we started down a path of, after a couple of whiskeys, of what would the set list look like if we wanted to do this for ourselves? Not that anybody's ever going to show up. We wrote a set list, and I said to the guys, hey, let's do this show. Let's put the work in, and let's do the exact opposite of what other bands do. Let's put the set list up as the advertisement. Let's just show them what songs we're going to play. And we sold out a theater, and we started moving from there. And so it's kind of piecemeal as it grows, but it's been 7 years, and we do anywhere between 90 to 100 shows a year typically right now. And it keeps seven families in full-time jobs. And I built it just like theater. So there's subs. When someone wants to go out and do their regular gig, our keyboard player, Eric, tours with Lionel Richie and Boston and all kinds of people. And so, and I'm out with Christian Bush from Sugarland, as a bass player and backing vocalist. So we're all able to do our regular touring gigs while still coming home and knowing that your bread and butter gig, Electric Avenue, is still intact, moving along, and it's happening. So it's, you know, it's kind of in my nature to take care of the people around me. Even in the days of Rent, I was still buying all the drinks for the subs.
I know.
Well, because you're making better money than them, and you know it, and just like, all right, I'll get these next couple rounds, because you're like,
yeah,
you can look around and see people, like, you know, counting their dollars and stuff. And then I guess I'm a little bit of a, I don't want to say the word socialist because it's got a bad connotation to so many people, but socialist mind, you know.
Yeah.
If I've got $100 in my pocket and there's seven of us, then we have a divisible number by seven of how much money we have. I don't have 100 and you have none. That's never been my way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, and I know that when this airs Saturday, you guys have a big virtual concert that you're doing. Can you, first of all, tell us how people can get tickets and see it? But secondly, explain how the virtual thing works. Like, are you guys all together, but then you just virtually stream it? How does that work?
So couple things is that obviously with coronavirus, everybody's touring has been completely upended.
Yeah.
And we immediately, when I found out that what was happening, and I got tipped off by a friend in government that there was a lockdown coming 72 hours before it happened. So I went online and I stayed up all night, no sleep, and just drank coffee. And I learned everything I needed to about streaming, bit rates, uploads, downloads, compression rates, everything that I could possibly get my fingers into notes.
Yeah.
And we did a live streaming show the first night of lockdown, right? Because the lockdown didn't happen until midnight. So I overnighted quite a few $1,000s of equipment to myself and learned how to go live streaming with full sound immediately. And we went into a venue here in Atlanta and we filmed two or three concerts in one night, and so that we would have material to broadcast for people because we knew where they're going to need entertainment. So we had that in the kitty, and then we went about doing the thing where, you know, you send videos back and forth, you know, Zoom style videos back and forth to each other and create. That is so much work. Yeah. And I learned about video editing. I didn't know anything about video editing, but you do it because people need entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need entertainment.
DIY.
They need us. We are entertainers. And during wartime, entertainers are more important than any other time in life. No matter whether we're being paid or not, just pull your damn socks up and go to work. And that's what we did. And so come fast forward to now, tons of bands have been doing live streaming. And a lot of the bands, especially around here, have been following the blueprint that we put together for the first night. So yeah, so just learned as much about streaming as possible, did that. Other bands have used that as a blueprint to make money and take in donations and stuff. But I immediately had a choice, and that was continue to do live streams and entertain people or pivot. And the pivot I made at the time was, this is going back 2.5 months now, I was like, there are some charities that Electric Avenue works with in the spring every year that are very important to me and to us. As a tribute band, that's part of our ethos. We know we didn't write these songs, so our job is to get them right. But also we have an obligation with our following of people that we can use this to raise money for people and the voiceless and the nameless. So we do a lot of charity events, and we are just eked over having raised $5 million in 7 years for charities.
That is unbelievable.
Isn't
that
amazing? And so it feels very, it's pride to do that. But we just got over that line by about $350 about 4 days ago that got the numbers in. I pivoted to approaching some of the charities that are most important to me and us. And got involved with figuring out how to produce online virtual charities. And we did three virtual online charities, for one for the homeless of Atlanta, one for the sick kids in the cancer ward. Children with cancer, they've already got it the worst. They don't need to know that they don't have funding because COVID and they couldn't do a fundraiser. So you figure out how to do it online.
Right.
So I took all of that blueprint and thought, why can't we take our band into a ticketed live show that is not on Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram? And so that's what I've been spending my last month on, is figuring out how to build out a system that will also be transferable, that I can tell other bands how to do it. And so we built an online ticketing system that is basically geocoded, that nobody can pass the link on to each other. So people can go to our website, which is just electricavenuemusic.com, under events, and find the event there and choose for this Saturday. And or you can go on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. All the links are there for Electric Avenue. If you just Google Electric Avenue Atlanta or Electric Avenue Band in America, you'll find us. And it's very simple. People just buy a ticket. It is set your own price. So our fans, some of our fans like to make donations and like to give us more money because some of them are a little more financially solid than some of us working musicians. And so there's different tiers for people. You can buy a ticket for $10. There are some people that have already bought a $1,000 ticket because they're well off and they want to support our team. But you can buy a ticket for $10 and set your own price, whatever that is to you. And then once you go through the ticket buying process, it emails you a link. And everybody gets one link in their email. And that link, you just click it between 7:45 and 8 p.m. on Saturday night. And it takes you to our live streaming service. We built out our own live streaming cloud.
That's so, so cool.
So that way, we're not on any of these free systems. It's just, if you don't get a ticket, you don't get into the concert. And so we are live streaming a concert with a rehearsed directorial staff and five camera shoot with lighting rehearsals. And we're actually doing a full-on show for people for MTV's 39th birthday, to the tune that they kind of caught wind of it and were like, this is great. How can we help? Even some of the VJs that were involved with MTV in the beginning have reached out as support and stuff. So it's kind of fun.
I cannot wait. I'm so excited.
It's a lot of work though, Allison. It is a lot of work.
I can't even imagine. I know Lulu and I produce 9 podcast episodes a week, and just that, you know, editing, we have our YouTube channel. Like I can't even imagine creating an entire system. And like, yeah, it's insane. That's crazy.
You work with people that are really good coders, and I can't code it, but I can sketch it out on paper. And I think that coders and other intelligent people are just like actors and musicians. And having produced a bunch of records myself now, I can say that the one thing I've learned about production is transferable as a skill set. And that is, actors, singers, musicians, artistic people, which includes coders, because they are artistic people. They're just using a different paintbrush. It's zeros and ones. And though anybody that's creative typically doesn't know their own potential until you push them there. I didn't know if I could do Rent. What business did I have having never had a vocal lesson? I still have never had a vocal lesson. Not one.
Yeah.
I've never had a guitar lesson properly. And yet somehow I'm still playing on records. And somehow I'm been singing all these years. And I'm not saying lessons aren't important. They are, but creative people find a way to do it. And if you can push them out of their own skin and they witness that they're capable, that's what I did with some of the coding people. Just said, can you do this? And they were like, do what? What? You want me to do what?
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought of it from that angle. Yeah, I can do that. So that's how we kind of got the system built out, is just pushing and pulling and lots of meetings. But if it works for us, then it's transferable. And I'll just basically pass along all this information to other ticketing companies. And here's how you do it. Here's how you keep your bands working during the pandemic lockdown.
Oh, that is so important.
We're not going back to work pretty soon, that's for sure.
I know.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Well, we're going to have all of your information, all the stuff about Electric Avenue and the concert, everything on the blog as well. So if anyone has trouble finding it, make sure you guys just go to our blog at 10kdollarday.com and you'll find all of Kevin's information there. And I cannot wait, because I've never seen you guys, because, you know, we've lived in different places. I followed you on Facebook, but I've never actually seen you. So it is on my calendar. I've got my ticket. I cannot wait. I'm so excited.
That's the interesting thing. It's like streaming is, it is what it is. Nothing compares to the visceral live entertainment level, you know?
Absolutely.
That's never going to change. There's nothing like being able to feel the pressure, the sound pressure in your chest from theater or music, but we got to just accept what we've got and you just move through it. You know, we just, none of us know what tomorrow brings right now, but I think we've all had a, been forced into a little reset here emotionally. Yeah. How do you make through? I don't know. Yeah. You just figure it out, man.
Yeah. And figure that's what you're doing. Making it work.
Yeah. It's just trying to make it work for as many people as possible. You know, if you look after people, typically karma will come back to you.
I know. That's why you're one of my favorite people.
Thank you.
All right. So I want to ask you some of the questions that we answer every Wednesday on our full episode.
Yes.
And there are no wrong answers, no pressure. But Kevin Spencer, what is your current obsession?
Oh, great question. Family.
All right.
And I've always been in love with my family, being my wife, Christy, she's my world. And Dan, our stepson, and my stepson and our two dogs. That is everything to me. That is heart and soul, and just being able to keep our time together. I want to be in the moment. You know, I know that sounds really crazy, but this reset has, because I'm so busy and touring and flying and doing this. And Christy's got design shows on HGTV that she's overseeing, and she produces Target commercials on HGTV, and she's working on the Dream Home and the Urban Oasis Dream Home and all these other like giveaway homes and flying here. And she's very successful as a designer. And then when we get back and we get time together, sometimes it's challenged because we're both so pulled and our phones are going off. And then it's you don't have true in the moment time. So that's what I'm focused on the last 5 months of pandemic. Is just a matter of, God, what a beautiful reset. I'm married to my best friend. I love my dogs. And Daniel and his wife, Nicole, are just amazing. And so I'm happy. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah, it has been, there have definitely been pros to the pandemic. And I think it is that reset. It's finding time for things that you once didn't have time for, and then realizing I'm going to implement that into my life, even when things go back to normal, because now I realize that it feeds my soul.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I've definitely had those moments too.
We've been gardening. We've been killing it at gardening.
Yes. Okay. Or flowers?
Both, but food primarily. We love flowers too, but like we always have a good big garden. We have a deck right off of our bedroom, the master bedroom up here in Atlanta. We live in an old Fourth Ward area, so I'm three doors over from the Martin Luther King birthplace in the historic district here. So it's a nice old 100-year-old southern home with the quad porches, two up, two down, and a full backyard and stuff. So we got in this neighborhood when nobody wanted to live here. And you know, we did really well for that, just trying to revitalize a hurt neighborhood. But we got a lot of property. So we would always have one garden. But when pandemic kicked in, we were just like, look at each other. We're like, let's go for it. And so we now have four full large gardens. Yeah. So we're able to eat at least one full meal a day out of the garden for the last 4 months.
Dream.
That's just walk so out back awesome. And pick your own lettuce and your own tomatoes and cucumber for your lunch, you know, every day. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. So anyway.
Yeah, that's amazing. What's on your wish list?
My wish list. Well, if I could wish anything, I think that I would do away with all pathogen diseases right now. You know, I know that's really vaulted and lofty, but because it's disrupted. We all knew SARS when it first came out in 2002 or whatever it was, and it made it into my native country in Toronto.
Yeah.
But it didn't make it into the States too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was on the radar, but not to a full degree. I don't think any of us ever thought we'd be living with masks as our norm. You know, that felt like it was something that would happen on the other side of the planet, but never here. And that's our own arrogance that we didn't see that coming. But that would be my wish. I would do away with all of that stuff if I could use one wish.
Yeah. It's crazy that my 6-year-old, like, this is a new normal for her. And it's something that she may even grow up thinking, where's your mask? Does everyone have their mask? Like, and I could have. It's even weird to me sometimes when I see her walking with the mask on. I'm like, wow. Okay, so this next question I feel like is going to be hard for you because you're one of the most generous people I know. But if you had $10,000 and you had to spend it on yourself, Kevin Spencer, give it away yet, but you have to spend it. What would you do selfishly? What do you want to spend it on? $10,000 extra.
Is this pre-COVID?
Yeah, it's imaginary.
Okay, cool.
It's imaginary luxury travel.
I would, without hesitation, I would just pack my bags with my wife and I would take her and we would start at the north of Italy and we would eat our way down to the south.
Oh, yes.
And that would be it.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we would just take, yeah, just because she's an art history major and it was already in our plans. I took her I had a gig in Barcelona about 18 months ago or 2 years ago or whatever it was. And God, time's working by, but I was able to take her to France and take her to the Louvre before it, you know, and go see all these on the Notre Dame and go see all those things that she wanted to see, obviously before any fires or water damage or whatever. So we've done that, but we haven't gone through Italy. So that would be the first thing I would want to do. Because Christy and I certainly talk about it over having a white Russian every night. Once our days are done, we sit down and have a nice drink together and we kind of, you know, do the couples. How was your day? What happened? Let's toe-to-toe. Let's figure this out. Because, again, referring back to it, if you don't take that time or make that time, you don't get it. And then weeks and months and you no longer really truly know your partner. And so we've talked about where we would go. So that was an easy one for me.
That's awesome. So now if you had $10,000 to give away, I know you've already mentioned that you have some charities that are close to your heart, but is there a charity or even a person that you would give away that extra $10,000 to?
Yeah, it would certainly be a charity. In fact, this t-shirt is a charity that I love. And so there's two charities specifically that come to mind. One is based out of Atlanta. It's called Songs for Kids. My friend Josh runs it. It literally is nothing but getting music into the hands of children that are sick or terminal. And that's exactly what Music Cares does, or Music Heals rather, in Canada. Very similar process, although theirs is more about development using music for children and through illness and making sure that music becomes part of their life. So, yeah, I mean, just getting music into the hands of sick children, that's every once in a while I go to the hospital and I'll go through it's the worst thing to experience and it's also the greatest thing to experience, but taking an acoustic guitar and your voice and going to the terminal children's ward where these kids are not going to make it, a lot of them, and they know it, and you sing to them and ask them what they want to hear. I'll never forget one day this young black girl said to me, she was so calm, and she said, come on, come sit down. And I said, sure, what do you want to hear? I think she's going to say Ronald McDonald or something. And she said, she was so calm and she was so peaceful with the fact that she has a very short lease on life left. And she said, do you know any Bob Marley? And I said, he's one of my favorite artists of all time. And she said, do you know the song about the three little birds? You're the one where everything's going to be all right. And I started crying, and the doctor's behind me pinching me going, stop crying. I had to get it together and sing that song for her. So yeah, like that's where my heart lives, is children. They deserve our love and they deserve to have a life. So the ones that don't, that's where my money would go, is putting music into their hands. Sorry to get you all misty. Sorry.
Spencer. Oh, okay. But then we'll switch gears. So we have a campaign. It's called What's Your Happy? And this is something that can be really small. It could be, oh, I have a great cup of coffee next to me, or it could be something big. I just booked this job that I'm really excited about. But we love to hear people's happies. We ask people to post on social media and hashtag what's your happy, just to kind of share in the little and the big moments. So to end our interview, I would like to know, Kevin Spencer, what's your happy?
I have two specific happies right now. One is named Trey and he's 13 and a half. And the other one is named Pepite and he's 3 and a half. And they're my two Weimaraners, the two dogs. Aww. Yeah. Because they are, I mean, they're laying on the floor beside me here and I'm in my home studio. And even when I'm working and editing or whatever, they're just in their bed. And then every hour on the hour, they get up and, like, you know, kind of want to go and just do something for a few minutes. And they remind me to take my head out of editing and comping and writing and cutting and, you know, music and production. They remind me that that life is still here, and that all that other stuff that's driving me bananas is not that important. You know, it's unconditional with them. So that's my happy, is just a constant reminder of unconditional love. And I think the fact that Trey's 13 and a half and we know he's in his final years. We didn't think he was going to make it this, you know, and he's got signs, you know, and we don't need to go too deep on that, but that's dogs and you don't get them if you don't want to help them from the start to the finish. So he's reminding me that life is precious and that time is important.
And I'm sure that just like my dog, they've enjoyed these last few months when everyone's been home.
Yeah, he's like, pandemic, this is awesome.
Yeah, he's like, what are you talking about?
Pathogen what?
Oh, that's awesome.
Dogs are wonderful, wonderful things.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. I could talk to you for so long.
Can I just say that your skin looks so good.
Thanks. Thank you.
I do skin regimen too. I do all kinds of stuff. In fact, I'm probably a little blotchy because we've just been doing some. But truthfully, you know, as you age, you just got to take care of yourself. It's your skin is your largest organ on your planet, on your body. And, you know, a good friend of mine, Robin, who's my wife's best friend, is a Pilates instructor. And she said to me, you know, you beat yourself up on the road so heavily. Look at the backpack you're carrying. And you've got two guitars with you at all times. And you're literally on foot for 3,000 miles a week or something, coast to coast when you're touring. And she's like, you know, you're still beating your body up. When is it going to come to a point in your life when you're going to make your body your priority? And I was like, whoa, that's heavy.
Oh.
So yeah, like skin, exercise, stretching, back workouts. Mm-hmm. You know, I put a damn chin-up bar on the stairs in our house. So that every time I go down, I do a couple pull-ups and chin-ups and leg raises.
That's smart.
And it's like when you're going past it 25 times a day. So I'll do a rep of 10 or a rep of 20 and just, you know, keep your body together.
Yeah. I do that with anytime I use the bathroom, as I'm washing my hands, I do 10 squats.
Do you really?
Yeah. Because then you don't even think about it because you can do 10 squats easy.
Yeah.
But if you're using the bathroom 6 to 12 times a day, then you end up doing 120 squats and you don't even think about it. So yeah, I've been the past few years as I get into my later 30s,
but now
I've really tried to focus on
but now in pandemic you're washing your hands so much you're like, god darn it, these squats,
my legs. that's so true. Oh god, I could talk to you for hours, which we might just do once we get off this podcast. But I do want to thank you for taking time out and talking to our listeners. I'm so excited about your concert, which when this airs will be today. So guys, make sure you go to our blog, go to the Electric Avenue Facebook and website and get these tickets. And thanks again for spending some time and catching up and getting all of our listeners excited about you.
Well, again, just anybody, you don't want to come to this concert on Saturday if you don't like to have fun. And don't come if you don't like 80s pop, because that's what it is. It's Tears for Fears, Simple Minds, Howard Jones, Depeche Mode, The Cure, all the bands that we all grew up with that we love. And a little more celebratory and anthemic feeling.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Awesome.
Who doesn't love 80s? Come on.
I don't know. I've met one or two people that don't, and I just
have you.
They're not my friends anymore, but that's okay. I'm just kidding.
You're like, we don't hang out. We're not on the same wavelength.
Well, it's like the same. It's like people that don't like garlic. If you don't like garlic, I don't think we should be friends.
That's true. I love garlic. I chew garlic when I'm sick.
Well, you should.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, so good to see you and talk to you
and
catch
up
with you. And again, we'll have all of your stuff on social media and in the blog. So guys, make sure you follow and check out Electric Avenue and my friend, Kevin Spencer. So say bye to everyone, Kev.
Bye-bye, friends. We'll see you guys soon. Hopefully we'll see you guys on the road. In fact, if any of you are ever, when we get back to normal touring, if you guys are ever at any shows, come up and say, hey, I'm a friend of the $10K Dollar Day podcast. And I know Allison Burns.
There you go. All right, guys, we will see you tomorrow on our Daily Happy. Bye.
That was 10K Saturday with Allison and Lulu. And don't forget, with friends like us, who needs amenities?